Welcome to this Financial Advisor podcast, a weekly podcast where we speak to leading financial advisors. My guest today is Michael Haldane, the founder of Global and Local. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Michael, you founded Global and Local 20 years ago. Give us a bit of background into the firm and what it specializes in.
It was officially 1999, but it was actually in 1996. I was 27. My wife and I had a girl age a month old. I hated my boss. I had no assets at all, and I thought now or never, and I went out on my own. And I knew nothing. I worked at a life company for 8 weeks, and it folded. What I had learned was the vital. They said, we the best offer what we offer, nothing else. And I thought, that's rubbish. Want to offer what the end user wants. And in 1999, I formed a company. Now we have around 40 agencies with companies from Allen Gray, R&B, wherever. Offshore, we have 18 agencies. And we offer a client what they want. I have 5 in-house analysts. So they look at every single fund, interview the managers, and offer what we think is the best. And that has, over the last 20 years, earned us trust and constant earnings.
So you've hinted a bit now at my next question, but tell us a bit about Global and Local's investment philosophy.
Don't look at what funds have earned over the last month. Look longer. My parents, it was all about working at a company 40 years, earning enough, retiring 65. Now, because of medicine, health aids, whatever, someone might live to 95, and their money runs out at 80. And they go, So in the past, it was all about entering it into options which are considered safe, no risk at all. But now you have to have an average, the risk, the balance. And that's what we're all about. We have an element of the risk, but as I outlined earlier, we have 5 analysts. And because of our license, we are able to amend funds online when we have to. And that has certainly given us an edge.
I think that's something that many advisors are trying to teach the layman. So you look to the long-term and balance your risk.
Yeah, don't panic.
Especially now with the elections. Given the current low-growth economy in South Africa and the uncertainty surrounding its political and economic future, clients must be on tenterhooks. What are some of the questions that they're asking you? Just how nervous are they?
They're petrified, absolutely petrified. They're asking me, where do I buy a gun? They are asking me, where should I live? What's the best? Canada. Us. They are asking me my pension, is it safe? And they are also asking me, what about the rand? And I answer them and say, take a deep breath. This country somehow survives. Somehow things work. We have a good infrastructure. Reserve, the bank, is really independent, doing a great job, and the government would be insane to touch any old age the money. I also answer them. There are, if a couple of things were fixed, the country would overnight change, and that's education. If you can pass maths with an average grade of 20%, who will ever, ever hire you? Eskom, fix it. Water, clean it. Government, change it. And arrest criminals and put them away forever. Quite simple. And that's what we think.
So given the extreme nervousness, they must be banging down your door. Are they, how involved are they in their financial plans? Are they phoning you every second day, or do they just pitch for their annual review?
Look, we've got probably 3,000 clients, and of those, it's a wide mix. Most of them use us because they totally trust us. And we SMS them once a month, the market updates, email them an update quarterly, and meet with them once a year. So generally, they trust us. They use us because without an advisor, they would earn less. But we have clients that every day look at the share prices, units, and they nag the hell out of us. And it's all about, in our industry, controlling clients' emotions. And that is of my job 80%. Calm down, take a breath, don't sell because it will bounce. And they generally listen.
You sound particularly positive about South Africa, which is good to hear. Given that, what opportunities do you see in the local market, if any?
It's the most extraordinary country in the world. Our economy doesn't match our markets. 4 shares represent almost half our market. Naspers owns a company in China which relies on 9-year-old boys going online every day. Our top 20 companies of the markets represent 60%, and of their earnings, most are offshore. So it's bizarre, but what happens in South Africa doesn't really matter. And offshore funds, emerging market funds, have us in the mix. So if there is a fall in the dollar, Donald has an off day, there's a fund manager in Houston who says, I have $500 million, South Africa's underweight, let me buy. So America in the next 18 months probably will dip, and that will actually help us a lot. Our markets have run hard, so I am advising that it's probably going to be a little bit of a hiccup in the next month or so, but as I outlined earlier, it's about the long run. So I love the country. Myself, I have no interest in living anywhere else, but it is also very linked to the rand. And the rand, unfortunately, is like a leaf in the wind. And if anyone knows where it's heading, they lie.
Yeah, that's actually quite a lot. No one can tell where it's going. And your clients expect you to know, unfortunately.
In my office on my desk, I have a pack of dollars, which are fake, and I have a large ball. If they ask me anything, I rub the ball and I say, I can't tell the future, and these aren't real.
I love that. So of all the firm's investments currently, of all the firm's investments currently, how much would you say is invested offshore and where predominantly?
Of my total book, I have offshore probably 40%. And that is really balanced. It's spread across the world. I'm underweight in America. Trump makes me uneasy. Last week, he had his 10,000th tweet, which was a lie. I'm also underweight in China, but I am overweight in Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, and India, because as China grows, their labor becomes more expensive and they have to outsource, and it's happening in their neighbors. England, right now, I am overweight. Brexit is a joke. If it happens or not, England will continue, and the markets have not really gone down at all. Personally, I'm very, very overweight now on the pound. The future, what does that hold offshore? As I outlined earlier, probably the end of next year, a dip. At that time, we will reweight.
You mentioned that among the countries that you are invested in or you are overweight in, including Vietnam, Malaysia, and Indonesia. How exactly do you get exposure to these companies? What instruments do you use?
I use offshore funds. There are 185,000 registered offshore funds in the world, and many offshore companies offer them. There are some Asian countries that haven't got their own phone, so it might be a blend. I myself have very itchy feet, so I have traveled to 64 countries in the world. So everywhere that I invest in, I have been, and everything I recommend, I invest in first. And I only recommend it after at least 18 months of my own money entering in there. So if it falls, I also take the pain.
What general advice would you share with investors who are interested in venturing offshore? There must be sort of, you know, pros and cons to it, and there must be pitfalls that they can avoid, I'm sure.
Look, this is where they live. Everyone loves where they live, but of world markets, South Africa represents a tiny, tiny amount. Hong Kong, of world markets, represents so much more than us, and it's tiny. So if you invest offshore, do it gradually, have a balanced mix. Whatever day you move funds offshore, the dollar rate will always be better the next day. You cannot time the rand, it's impossible. I wish I could, but I can't. Spread the funds as much as you're able to. If you are accessing it from SA as an income, be aware that that is the most vital time, because up until then it's noise. If the rand is at 14 when you sell and it lands in SA, you have a month in order that it is entered back in rands, and within that month it might fall 1%, 5%, 6%. So generally, if I have an offshore client having an income from offshore, I advise take it annually to avoid fluctuations in the rand. But offshore investments are just the same as here. It's just a much larger ocean.
With regard to your mentioned balancing it out, would that include getting exposure to emerging markets as well as first world countries?
We are an emerging market, so my offshore exposure, emerging markets are Asia, nothing in Africa, and nothing in South America. I think those countries are too fraught with oil issues, corruption, the government issues. Asia have those issues as well, but they're more interested in earning money.
Just taking it back to an issue that we see a lot here. People are either not saving enough for retirement or they're making incredibly short-sighted decisions. What are the most common mistakes that you see investors making with their retirement savings?
For their first 25 years of marriage, it's all about their Jane and Andrew, putting them at school, varsity, whatever, and they don't save anything. It's left too late. If you are under age 35, I invest of your funds, put away 10% up until age 50, 15%, 50 to 60, 20%, 60 up, it's too late. I have clients in their 80s still working. I have a simple theory, models out of the window. I ask every single client, what's in the bank at the end of the month? Take half of it and save it. If it's in an RA, a pension, the bank, whatever it is, put it away. Because if you don't, you're going to spend it.
Are you finding that your clients are, in general, working longer?
Yes. I hit it into their heads over and over and over. Investment is not an expense. You're going to get it back and some. But if you don't put it away, you can have a second house, you can have an awesome car, but you can never retire.
What are some of the key lessons you've learned about serving clients in the industry over your 20 years? You've been through the dot-com crises, global financial crisis, a lot of volatility locally. I'm sure you've learned a lot.
Most vital thing is everyone's the same. They have the same needs, the same wants, and they are emotional animals. And if their investments are falling, they rant at you and the rave. And we have to be calm and give them the best advice always. My largest thing that I have learned is never listen to your accountant, lawyer, or doctor about investments. Never listen to your friend. Never answer an email which says, I will earn you a year guaranteed 20%. If it sounds too good, don't. And I tell everybody it's about constant earnings. Don't follow the buck.
So those conversations around the brand, the weekend, are not the way to go.
And it happens so often. It's unbelievable. People are so easily swayed, and it's their entire life. I don't get it.
In today's age where most information is a click away, we all have Google on our phones, we're all Googling everything all the time, why is having a financial advisor necessary?
There's so much information, there's so much noise. What does it mean? And it's our job to analyze it, make it simple, and let them know. Just an insurance policy, an investment contract, to understand what it means is impossible. We have to be there and say, this is what it actually means, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because investment companies often put the most vital points right at the end. Also, it's also all about interviewing managers, researching, finding out what's the best. On the internet, you will find a product. Someone offers it and says, this is the absolute best there is out of there. But there's maybe 100 other options. And finally, the most vital thing about an advisor is that word advisor. You a priest, you a doctor, you his trauma counselor. They tell you everything. In half an hour, you know their history about all their kids, their third the wife, the second the car, everything. You have to keep that secret from everybody forever. So it's about that trust and relationship you can never have on the internet.
What is the best and the worst financial advice, lastly, that you've ever received?
The worst is invest through life companies. The worst is, look at this fund, it's done so well in the last 6 months, let's put everything in there. The worst is low fees is the only way, and ignore the returns. The best is never put your eggs all in one. Even if you have a fantastic fund, I often have someone say, but this fund has out-earned these funds so much more. And I say, but it might not next month. Diversify. If you've earned a profit, it's going to fall one day. Take the profit. Take it. Lock it in. Do not panic when markets are falling. End of last year, the markets crashed. Everyone panicked. And I said, hang 10. This quarter we've just had, I think, is the best from 2007. And if they had exited out, they would have lost huge money. Sometimes it's best to cut your losses and move on. I have so often heard, oh, yeah, it's a great share. I heard the MD on the radio is a lacquer, okay. And yeah, but you're down 50%. Entered elsewhere. It might take 5 years, but we'll make it up. So, yes, that's my opinion.
That was Michael Haldane, the founder of Global & Local.